I'm going to do it in my style. Let's drop it. You come back like, it's Friday's Power Panel, it's Jimmy Dore.
We're so powerful.
Steve-O, it's Michael Shore. We're joining the TYT community to talk today on a Friday without Cenk and without all of that, you know, distraction about some fascinating stories. But I think we have to talk first about the first major hurricane to be coming to the United States since Katrina. This is now, when they say major, I don't want everybody who lived through Sandy to not think that that felt major. But the way that the National Weather Service talked about it, a hurricane at of level 3 is major, and Sandy, for all of its mayhem, was a level 1 hurricane. So, of course,
was it level 1 when it hit land?
It was level 1 when it hit land. Yeah. But it, you know, that just shows you the power of these hurricanes. Harvey is headed for Texas right now, and don't worry, because we have a president who is off to Camp David, and when asked if he had any message for the people of Texas, he said, "Good luck." That's what the president said. He said, "Good luck," which, I mean, what else are you going to say? They're about to face a hurricane, but you could say, "God, we're thinking about them. We're ready." I mean, he says he's going to.
He could have said, "Heck of a job, Brownie."
He could have said, "Heck of a job, Brownie." Mm-hmm. Well, so it would have been heck of a job, Brocky, because Brock Long is the head. He's the administrator of FEMA. He's not the director, but there hasn't been a director per se since 2003. They call him the administrator. This is a serious, serious threat to the people of Texas, to the Gulf Coast. But it's also a story about how we might not be prepared, that this administration does not have the pieces in place, not just at FEMA, but for what happens afterwards. The EPA has cut so much under President Trump already that the EPA, who is responsible for the environmental cleanup when they go in there afterwards, is not necessarily sufficient as it stands right now to do that. And as Texas will tell you, there's a lot to be concerned about. But let's talk about Brock Long for a minute, because if you say, all right, Brock Long is now the administrator of FEMA, good thing, right? Let's look at what Brock Long has on his resume. Here he is. He was the hurricane program manager at FEMA from November 2001 to January 2006. 4 years, 3 months. That's according to Brock Long's LinkedIn. Well, you know what falls in that little span there of hurricane management?
Let me guess. A hurricane named Katrina.
That's exactly right. So you got the guy who oversaw federal emergency management, hurricane program management, during Katrina, who's there now. Now, that's not to say that he's incapable. I think that anybody would have learned lessons from what happened then. But let's go to what we talked about just a moment ago, about the preparedness and what there is to be prepared for. Perhaps most concerning for former government officials with experience dealing with major storms, as Brock Long, is the lack of leadership in key positions at the EPA, Environmental Protection Agency, an agency perhaps less associated with hurricanes, but as we said, no less important when it comes to responding to the environmental disasters that they can bring. Further, EPA is the primary responder to petrochemical spills along with the state. Having a regional administrator in place provides crucial leadership. They don't have that there now. And the Texas Gulf Coast is home to nearly one-third of the United States refining capacity, making it an area especially prone to a storm-created environmental disaster. High winds or storm surge could breach active refineries or storage tanks, causing a release of chemicals or petrochemicals into the surrounding environment. When Katrina hit in 2005, the storm surge there inundated oil storage tanks, resulting in an estimated 8 million gallons of oil spilled into Louisiana. So, and Alabama and those waterways, when combined with Hurricane Rita, a Category 3 storm that hit the Texas Gulf Coast weeks after Katrina, the two storms caused an estimated 540 individual spills. So we can talk all we want about, oh God, there's never been a presidency like this. There's never been. But when the real stuff hits home, when it matters what's going on in our politics in Washington, in this administration, adept, it seems, at very little, cannot even put the manpower or woman power in place there to have this to have this readiness for after the storm. This isn't during the storm. This is after the storm. How do we countenance this? What then do we do?
Yeah, so for those who watch the show or who watch the Aggressive Progressives.
What's that?
The best show on the network.
Okay.
Jimmy and I often talk about the failings of the Democratic Party and how so many times they are, you know, too close or very similar to the Republican Party. But here is where there's a big difference. The Republicans don't believe in government. They don't believe in science. They don't want the government to have an active role in these kind of areas, whereas the Democrats do, and they are much better prepared for storms and cleanup and preparedness. I mean, I would argue that that the damage from these kind of storms, you know, with the global climate change, is a far greater threat to our society and our safety than you know, terrorists. So we, you know, Trump wastes all this time with all the travel bans for all the different countries, and here we have you know, an administration that is woefully unprepared to deal with natural catastrophes that we know are going to happen. It's a matter of when, but we know they're going to happen over and over again. And the notion that we don't have enough leaders in place to deal with the initial storm itself and the inevitable cleanup afterwards is just appalling. But I mean, Scott Pruitt, think about this guy. I mean, he is a person who now runs the EPA, who has for the longest time advocated for the dismantling and abolishing of the EPA. So he is in there right now fighting with career EPA administrators and other employees of the EPA. His whole role there is to gut it from the inside out.
Right, and so many people, the people that were supposed to stay there, because of the budget cuts and because of what they say is an impossible working environment with the administration, they've resigned and quit. So there are all these empty spaces, empty seats that they're not filling right now because they want to bring the budget of the EPA down. Now the EPA, if you have philosophical differences, if this goes back to the, you know, the moronic James Inhofe climate change argument and you want to gut the EPA, that's one thing. That's crazy, but that's not crazy dangerous. Well, it is crazy dangerous, I should correct myself. It is not immediately crazy dangerous because right now you have an empty EPA that's not going to be able to do, hopefully they'll be able to, but it, the fear is they're not going to be able to do the cleanup and the proper remediation afterwards.
So I'm, correct me if I'm wrong, maybe you can remember, but in 1992, there was Hurricane Andrew, or maybe it was 91, slow response by the George Herbert Walker Bush administration. A lot of people say that's why he lost to Bill Clinton was because of, he lost Florida because
it was 92, it was summer of 92. Yeah,
their slow response to that Hurricane Andrew was what people credited for not, for him losing Florida because of that. And you'd think that the Bushes would learn from that, they didn't. They put a horse trainer in charge of hurricane relief, and heck of a job, Brownie.
Not only that, then a Bush won the governorship of Florida a few years later anyway.
Yeah, so, yeah.
So there's a short memory.
Short, very short memory. So, and you know, Steve makes a good point that Democrats in general are more for government intervention and science and stuff like this, except, you know, of course, we've seen Flint, Michigan still hasn't had clean drinking water since 2014. Barack Obama came in, drank a glass of water and left town. So our government has been failing a lot lately. It's going to continue to fail. And the only thing you can hope for is that so the last time the Republican administration faced Katrina and they failed miserably, we had a Democratic House, Democratic Senate, and Barack Obama became president. Now, how much Katrina had to do with that? I say a lot. So this is, again, an opportunity.
To that point, Jimmy, after Katrina hit, George Bush's ratings fell below 40% and never recovered. Never recovered. He was in the 30s for the rest of his presidency.
And there was also a Democratic kind of a feeling that the Democrats were right. It was in 2004, John Edwards was out there, you'll remember Senator Edwards, saying that there are two Americas. And what Katrina did was it laid bare the fact that there were two Americas. Whatever happened to John Edwards, that argument endured, and that helped the Democrats win the White House that year. So the kind of the mood was changing because people were paying attention to that. But there was, in the aftermath of that, and I mean, JR, how many of these stories have we covered here? Where a hurricane comes, there's lack of preparedness, Then there's a prepare. Then there's the relief that it doesn't hit. But as we sat here and talked about Sandy, I mean, you saw the devastation. You saw the way that even Chris Christie at that time was responding.
The one I was going to bring up, Chris Christie and Sandy, right?
Yeah.
So that also people said gave Obama boosts because look at Chris Christie working with this Democratic president and boosting his numbers and trying to get some kind of nice with him. When in reality, it was trying to work with a way to maybe fix what was happening because. Obviously, no one really expected it to happen in that region. So I was actually wondering to the point where I was looking up exactly what happened again, because all these, again, I was mentioning this morning, there's hurricane season. So it's not like things should surprise you. It's just probably the devastation or the level of severity of these storms. Katrina even, I think Gustav was before it. That was worse. I think it was Gustav. I can't remember the names of these. But that was actually worse than Katrina. It's just or the preparedness and then the what was set to contain these on the ground wasn't set. Yeah. So these things happen. It's just a matter of how much we respond to taking care of them once they do.
Right. And it's early to say, and hopefully it will not have the devastating effect, but already FEMA has said that to be prepared for that, it's too early to say what we've learned and haven't learned. But the mere fact that we don't have every seat filled in the aftermath and the work for the aftermath of this hurricane is unbelievable. To Greg Abbott, the governor of Texas, Republican governor, who we rarely say a nice thing about because I rarely don't have one to say, he is saying that everybody who is seeking shelter will get shelter. It's hard to imagine that you have to say this, but he's saying even illegal immigrants will get shelter in Texas. That you have to say it is unbelievable, but he's saying it, I think, is also important. So I guess it remains to be seen what happens. It's a news story that isn't a news story yet, but I think that one of the things that we go into this looking at, I mean, from our vantage point, is what's going to happen afterwards.
Yeah, and again, I just want to emphasize the point that government matters. You can't fight climate change by yourself. You can't fight against hurricanes by yourself.
Good point, yeah.
You need to mobilize, and you need to have government action to direct the tremendous amount of resources that are needed to house hundreds of thousands of people, tens of thousands of people, to move them to safer areas. I mean, you can't just do that alone. You can't create a charity to do that. You need the arm of the government to do this, and you have to believe in government services. You have to believe in science and the predictive power of science to know when. I mean, we already know, as Jared mentioned, we have a whole season of hurricanes. This happens every single year. I mean, and private industry takes into account for it. So if you go to the Gulf Coast in certain months, it's cheaper because you're going there during hurricane season. It's more expensive during high season. Like, we know this is happening. So why are we surprised when there's a big hurricane on its way? And oh my God, we're not prepared. It's unacceptable. We need to have better leadership from our government than what we get right now.
And at TYT, of course, we're going to hold their feet to whatever fire we can. Even this aggressive progressive show probably will. And just keep watching, because we're going to be talking about everything that they aren't doing. And of course, citing what did go well. And maybe hopefully Brock Long is better than Brownie, who we miss so dearly. Okay, moving on now to politics. You'll recall when Donald Trump gave his remarks about Charlottesville and the aftermath of Charlottesville, he was flanked on either side of him, on both sides. Elaine Chao was there, so too was his Treasury Secretary, Steven Mnuchin, and Gary Cohn. I point out that they are Jewish only because it is pertinent to this story. Gary Cohn was taken aback, supposedly, by the president's remarked. He stayed with the administration, as did Steven Mnuchin. But a lot of the business leaders on a couple of the panels left. And a lot of from the ADL to the Simon Wiesenthal Center, of course, the Southern Poverty Law Center, people that speak out on behalf of those who are slighted by hate and racism, white supremacy, etc., spoke out. Gary Cohn did not. Steven Mnuchin did not. Well, we learned now today through the reporting of the New York Times that Gary Cohn had drafted a resignation letter saying that he cannot apparently, because the letter itself wasn't released, that he can't countenance staying with this administration. What he said publicly in an interview about his standing with the Financial Times is this. This was with the New York Times, but it's through the Financial Times. Citizens standing up for equality and freedom can never be equated with white supremacists, neo-Nazis, and the KKK. I believe this administration can and must do better and consistently and unequivocally condemning these groups and do everything we can to heal the deep divisions that exist in our communities. As a Jewish American, I will not allow neo-Nazis ranting, Jews will not replace us, to cause this Jew to leave his job. And so you get the feeling that he's disgruntled, that he spoke up privately. He said he went to Trump's country club in Bedminster, New Jersey, said to the president in very direct terms that he could not stand the way he presented this, but he didn't go anywhere. And Steven Mnuchin, the most, I would say, prominent Jewish member of this president's cabinet, the Treasury Secretary, had this to say when asked about Gary Cohn.
Gary and I have known each other for 20 years. I can tell you I'm speaking to him every day. His number one focus is absolutely working on tax reform with me and getting tax reform done. And Gary's committed to be here and couldn't be more excited about that.
Jimmy, he said Gary's committed to be here, couldn't be more excited about it. And he just drafted a resignation letter also.
Well, sounds like Washington, D.C., right? Sounds fantastic. Why stay? What's in it for these people to stay? Is it just that they really want to serve the country, or because they want to get a flag for, look how I got some special corporate tax breaks for everybody, or, you know, like, or I got Social Security. Finally, I got the Social Security money invested into the Wall Street. I finally did it. So they'll build a statue to me. Why does he want to stay?
I'm glad you asked, Steve. I mean, Jimmy, because you and Steve had no idea that this was the next thing, that there's an answer built in here. This is why he stayed. Mr. Cohn is known. He worked at Goldman Sachs to be interested in becoming chairman of the Federal Reserve and still sees that as a possibility. It was not clear whether he told the president he planned to speak to the Financial Times. One person briefed on Mr. Cohn's discussions with the president said Mr. Cohn had made clear to Mr. Trump how upset he was and that he planned to be candid publicly about it if asked. Mr. Cohn's remarks were in stark contrast to a statement from the Treasury Secretary, as we said, Steven Mnuchin, who defended the president. Mr. Mnuchin, as we said, also Jewish. He wants to be part. Now, if he wants to run the Federal Reserve, doesn't it, considering all these financial gurus who have left this administration, wouldn't it kind of burnish his credentials to leave the administration and then go to the Federal Reserve?
It would prop him up and make him look more like a serious actor if he did that.
That's what I'm saying. By people who care about it, who are these business leaders who may have left, don't you think?
I totally agree. Steven Schwarzman left. He runs the Blackstone Group, and he's extremely wealthy and powerful.
Carl Icahn left.
They all left. Yeah. And so I don't understand Gary Cohn. I mean, at what point do you put aside your personal ambitions? At what point do these multi-millionaires and billionaires decide, I have enough money. Yeah. I'm going to stop working with a president who is openly embracing the white supremacist groups. I mean, when is it? I don't understand these people.
It's such a layup,
at all.
I think, for these people.
And for Gary Cohn, I was a little bit grossed out by that comment that he is not going to let those comments replace this Jew or whatever he said.
Yeah.
Because he's giving them cover. Because he's Jewish and he openly talks about him being Jewish.
Right.
And he's working with Trump and Mnuchin is working with Trump and they're supporting him. It gives Trump the ability to say, I'm not anti-Semitic.
Right.
I have Jews right here.
But also in fairness, they're saying that by staying, and I'm devil's advocating here, by staying, they're saying, all right, we're not going to let the white supremacists win. If all the Jews in the cabinet resign, well, Charlottesville went well for the people who wanted it to go that way. So I understand the conundrum.
I get that.
They shouldn't have taken the job in the first place.
Right, right. But I mean, I get they can cut both ways.
Yeah.
I totally get it. But he is now knowingly and willingly working for an administration that is hostile towards Jewish people.
And
embraces Nazis.
This is
crazy.
Yes.
It gives to the atmosphere that all these politicians have I just read this. I'm going to get to this in a second. But so Steve,
take your time,
Cohen,
Rabbi Jackson.
So Cohen is going through the whole thing of first he sends his letter out how he's going to resign, then he's going to stay anyway. So where are you pulled the most? It's because we think it's going to all blow over because this isn't new, is what I've been trying to say a lot. This isn't new in our country. So they go, oh, well, the American people generally don't give a shit about racism, neo-Nazis. They just go, oh, wag their finger at them and then accept them back into normal life because it's just a part of our body.
Right.
No, it shouldn't be, but we're willing to accept it because society has allowed us to. It's allowed politicians to get by supporting neo-Nazis, it's not like this is, again, brand new. Donald Trump is not the first racist in office, and he's not the only one that's currently in office. So the House, who many people came out, including Paul Ryan, and said Trump screwed up with his comments about the equivocation of all the groups are at fault. They're putting together or floating a resolution that says, in part, they strongly condemn racism, intimidation, and violence by all groups, regardless of their political affiliation or political motivation, that engaged in such conduct, including the violence by the Klan, neo-Nazis, and others in Charlottesville, Virginia. So after all of this talking about how horrible what Trump just did was, the House Republicans are floating a resolution saying damn near the same thing.
Yeah.
And we're supposed to go, oh, well, you know, they float a resolution and they said that they condemn it all because they think America, which it is fucking racist. They're reading the tea leaves and like, well, we don't want to abandon our base of racists. So let's keep saying we don't like them, but let's keep saying we do like them. Trump he's not the new magician about this. They've always done this and they're continuing to do this.
Well, I would also say this. Why is it the least bit surprising that Trump would go in this direction? It's not surprising to me at all. And for folks like Gary Cohn and Steve Mnuchin and anyone for that matter who's Jewish, who is now offended by Trump, my point is, were you offended when he said, you know, my black guy in the audience, mm-hmm. when he said Mexicans are rapists and murderers?
You can't be judges.
Yeah, I mean, that was outrageous. You know, I mean, that's in fact how he launched his whole campaign, by saying Mexicans are rapists and murderers, and some of them are, I guess, nice people. Yeah, they're fine people on all sides. Everyone does it. Mexicans are rapists. I mean, he's been saying this all along.
Yeah.
So why is now the moment for Gary Cohn and Mnuchin to act like they're shocked and chagrined? They should have known all along that this is going
to
happen.
And
now it's an act.
Right. And to paraphrase Dennis Green, who you probably, well, you may know him, but
I know. Minnesota Vikings.
Yeah.
Arizona Cardinals. Bears are who we thought they were.
They are who we thought they were.
Trump is, that's what I was going to say. Yeah. Trump is who we thought he was. He is who he said he was. And all these people who said yes to serving in his administration, not that that's not a plum job for a lot of these people. And this guy he's an economic advisor. He wants to go on to the Federal Reserve. Well, of course, be an economic advisor to a president. But this is exactly what, like you said, it's exactly what we thought.
Yeah, and this is why you have to kind of tackle this issue head on, because people always think, oh, someone's being racist or hateful towards another group that I'm not a part of, so I'm not going to care that much. It's so stupid because they were going after Muslims and Mexicans early on because they're the easiest targets. And then later on, they always work their way up to the Jews. Mm-hmm. So if you're Jewish, and this is why I think the Anti-Defamation League is established and all that, they know that it's going to get there. You know, you start with Muslims, you start with the Mexicans, you go to the trans, then you go to the Jews, then you go to the gays. Eventually, the haters are going to hate everyone that's different.
Yeah.
So you should have been shocked and outraged in the very beginning when he was saying this about Mexicans, not wait until the end when he's saying this about the Jews. Like, there's a continuum. The haters are going to go after all the people that are different. They're not going to say, well, we only hate these folks, those people we don't hate.
Can I give you a quick theory of why these people stay, why they joined in the first place? Is because two of the last four RNC chairmen have apologized for the Southern strategy. So if you're a Republican and you're Jewish or you're a black guy or any other minority, even a woman, you're used.
How about the log cabin Republicans?
That's right. You're used to. Isn't that something?
The log cabin.
That's like that.
They're unbelievable.
That log cabin Republicans. They're gays for Republicans because they want the tax benefits, which is like a black guy being in the Klan because he owns a white sheet factory. You know, so what my thing is, I think these guys are used to it, right? They're used to ignoring racism inside the Republican Party. They're used to it, which is what you have to do. Steve Mnuchin's been ignoring the Southern strategy his whole life. So is Cohn. They've all been doing it.
Wasn't Cohn a Democrat?
And I don't know.
I think he's a registered Democrat.
But he was a regular blue-collar guy. He was a salesman selling. Cohn used to sell aluminum siding and stuff. And it's an amazing story about how he got his job anyway. But So I think that's it. They're used to ignoring it. That's how the gears work. If you're going to be a successful businessman Republican, the gears work. You have to ignore the racism of your party, right?
And his party now, and a lot of Twitter is hashtag Cone must go. They don't want to even support someone who is even a little bit against the president. So they are the ones, the right wing Twitter is the one, is the group that is really most vocally against Gary Cohn, right?
So Michael Steele, after the both side, many sides comment, and the Michael Steele, former RNC chairman, said that the problem is that even though his approval might be down to 36%, that inside the Republican Party, it's still at 80%. Mm-hmm. So what do you think about that? 80%. So that's what this is, right?
I don't believe that, first of all. I don't believe. Okay. I think there has been a real dent in his popularity amongst Republicans. So I don't believe that number. That's Michael Steele spewing one thing he heard once. And certainly, I don't think it's recent.
No, I just heard a recent poll that had him at 75% approval from Republicans.
From Republicans, yeah. I mean, that would be consistent with it. I don't believe it. I mean, I think that polling... I'm much more skeptical of polls than I used to be.
I believe it. And 75% of Trump voters are thrilled with him still to this day.
Right.
The other 25% are mixed. Like, he's trying. He didn't do everything I would like for him to do. But overall, I'm okay. He has very, very high standing within his party still.
I think it's really falling within his party. I think with his supporters it is. Mm-hmm. I don't think it was ever entirely there within his party. So I think, and you're seeing people fall off it. I think that the healthcare thing hurt him a lot with a lot of his voters too.
Don't you think it's weird that he has a higher approval rating than Paul Ryan?
Well, yeah, and how about he has a higher one than Mitch McConnell?
Well, way higher. Mitch McConnell is one of the most.
But I think that's also it also ties them to Congress. It's easy to have one person when they're the president because it's red or black on the roulette wheel. You pick one or the other. But when you're tied with Congress and Congress is at 8%, you're gonna be related to that number more than the other. That's just what I think. All right, we have a lot to cover. We're gonna take a little break. Go hashtag TYT live. Get in there, talk about the show. We'll read some tweets and we will be back with more on TYT. Welcome back to Young Turks. Michael Schur along with Steve-O and Jimmy Dore. We have a little business to take care of. First, some of your TYT live tweets. Hashtag, I still say pound. Hashtag TYT live. Get in there and talk about it. Well, before pound.
Do you have a rotary dial?
Tic-tac-toe board. Right. What's the pound? It's a tic-tac-toe board. You have a rotary dial. Some of your postcards and letters. Eric Rooney, there's very good. Good people on both sides of Steve-O.
Where?
I'd have to agree. I'd have to agree with that.
Both sides.
Steve-O, they're very good
both
people.
Sides. Both sides.
Well done, Eric. Rita Ann, it's not that Republicans don't believe in science, it's that they believe more in money. Inarguably true.
Yeah.
They don't love science, but the issue about Harvey is not just the science of hurricanes, but it's the fact that it's the difference, and Jimmy was talking about it earlier, but how Democrats and Barack Obama didn't do enough about Flint, et cetera. But the general principles of liberalism in America have been government taking care of the people, as opposed to Republicans who want no government around at all. And I think that's what it gets to. Rebecca Flaherty writes, "Yeah, Gary Cohn was outraged, but he likes power so much he decided that he's not that outraged," which, I think that's true. I think there are levels of ways that people think about this. I don't know how much power he has. He's an economic advisor to the president.
Right.
Maybe he has more now that he stood up to him, or maybe he'll be banished and never be allowed into the Oval Office. And finally, Erock1980 says, "What are the odds that Trump will even go to Texas after this hurricane ravages the state?" Yeah, can you imagine him walking through Texas with Ted Cruz, the senator, Greg Abbott, who's in a wheelchair, and you could see the president doing one of these again, like he did to another handicapped person on the campaign, a reporter. I mean, the hypocrisy that people have to swallow when they appear with this president after that election, none more than Ted Cruz. But yes, Erock, 1980, you're right about that. A couple of other things: membership, become a member, you get so much more access, podcasts, live streams, the archives. You get to see what's that show we do on Wednesday nights called?
Oh yeah, Old School.
Old School, right?
That's a pretty good show, but there's a better one on Thursdays, right?
All right, so let's. It's called tytnetwork.com/join. We're on a time crunch. I'm sorry, guys. Post game, there's a new Friday post game available featuring the millennial dumpster fire. Aggressive, progressive, go to the aggressive, progressive.
You know what's interesting is
a lot of people say it's their favorite show on the network, Aggressive, Progressive. A lot of members.
Like three
many,
out of the,
many people are saying this.
Three out of the six people in the studio right now
many say
that it's their favorite show on the
network. Many people.
Right. Yes, so
unbelievable amounts of people.
A lot of people say that about What the Puck. Hockey show on TYT Sports.
I didn't know there was a show named What the Puck.
Right, it airs right, but we're the lead in to Aggressive Progressive.
There's a sports show on this network?
There is, yeah.
That is fantastic. Yeah. I've been saying they should do sports.
Well,
for
it's
a
not
long
sports,
time.
It's soccer a lot.
It's a lot of soccer and hockey and stuff like that.
You know what? Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. But you know, back to the hurricane for a second. Part of the reason why the hurricane
bring us
sorry guys.
When you said this is the biggest hurricane to hit America, I was going to think since Craig Ferguson. I didn't know what you were going to say after that.
but these hurricanes are gaining in strength because of the warmer air, right? And you know, that's attributable to climate change, and a lot of the folks who don't believe in it, especially the fossil fuel industry. It's like
it's warmer air, it's a warmer sea.
Yeah, everything is warmer. Yeah,
warmer.
And it's kind of a cruel irony, or perhaps justified irony, that the areas that are hit are the areas that are so dependent on fossil fuels.
Yeah.
Here in Texas, I'm not saying that they deserve it. I'm just saying that it's interesting how that's playing out.
Right.
And it's like a double whammy because one, they get hit with this awful hurricane, and two, it's going to cause a lot of toxic spills.
Yeah.
That's going to have even more damaging consequences to the environment and to our society.
Yeah, so. That's absolutely true, and that is the most important part. In the literal eye of the hurricane, some of these other things matter a lot acutely, but that's the overriding conversation about this stuff. And let's go back to the man in the White House or wherever he is. He's at Camp David right now. He has had an interesting relationship with the folks over at MSNBC on Morning Joe, Joe Scarborough, Mika Brzezinski. He talks regularly about how terrible the show is. He doesn't watch it. Today, immediately after watching it, he responded to it. John Kelly was on. Let's listen to Willie Geist and Mark Halpern talking about John Kelly.
Mark Halpern, was it always too much to expect that General John Kelly, as great American as he is, to be able to control Donald Trump, whatever that means, to control what goes out through his Twitter feed, to keep the reins on him during a big political rally in Phoenix or at a press conference at Trump Tower?
Veterans of past White House laugh at the notion that the stuff that's being instituted would be being instituted many months into an administration.
Right.
This is basic stuff about flow to the president and about controlling the access to the Oval Office. They can change the system, but Kelly can't control the president watching TV. He can't control the president tweeting. He's not going to try. And the reality is, fixing the process will help, but the president dominates the situation through his own communication. And I think that it's going to not end well.
Well, you'd think that the president didn't see this because he doesn't watch it. And the proof that he doesn't watch it is on the president's Twitter feed. I mean, let's go back to May 9th, 2016, and I'll take you through. This is May 9th of 2016, about a year and a half ago. Donald Trump, wow, I hear Morning Joe has gone really hostile ever since I said I won't do or watch the show anymore. They misrepresent my positions, ! Then, again, June 3rd, less than a month later, I don't watch or do Morning Joe anymore. Small audience, low ratings. I hear Mika has gone wild with hate. Joe is Joe. They lost their way. Right? Days later on June 8th, he doesn't watch it, this guy. Nobody is watching Morning Joe anymore. Gone off the deep end, bad ratings. You won't believe what I am watching now.
I'm gonna guess Morning Joe.
Right. Keep guessing. You're exactly right. More again. I mean, this is in August of last year. Morning Joe's weakness is its low ratings. I don't watch anymore, but I heard he went wild against Rudy Giuliani and Second Amendment. Sad and irrelevant. They're irrelevant on August of 2016. Later in August of 2016, their irrelevance still piques his interest. Tried watching low-rated Morning Joe this morning. Unwatchable. Morning Mika is again off the wall. She's been off the wall since months earlier. A neurotic and not very bright mess.
It's just because of the effect of these. Now he's president June of 2017.
Is Mika off the wall in the Michael Jackson sense of living off the wall?
Well, she's more bad in the Michael Jackson sense, yeah.
Okay.
She's a thriller.
She's a PYT. Come on, your turn, James.
I'm out.
There's got to be a man in the
mirror. She's got to beat it.
She's got to beat it. There you go. All right.
Making these jokes is as easy as 1, 2, 3.
That's true.
It's ABC.
Yeah. All right.
I think we're done. I think we're all dating ourselves.
I think we're done.
Okay.
I think we're done. Donald Trump, as president, I heard poorly rated Morning Joe speaks badly of me. Don't watch anymore. The guy says he doesn't watch anymore in each one of these. Then how come low IQ crazy Mika along with Psycho Joe? Right? And now, this is a man who doesn't watch. In June of this year, as president again, watched low-rated Morning Joe for the first time in a long time. Fake news, he called me to stop a National Enquirer article. I said no, bad show. And then this morning, this is the man who does not watch Morning Joe, couldn't care less what they say, low-rated, terrible. This morning, after we heard Halperin and Geis talk, General John Kelly is doing a fantastic job as chief of staff. There is tremendous spirit and talent in the White House. Don't believe the fake news. I just love this. I mean, this guy can't tell the truth even about things that he's, you know, criticizing for them not telling the truth.
I can't get over Mark Halperin going without a jacket on a news show. That was kind of crazy,
and
right?
That shirt was kind of it was controversial. Yeah. I mean, it was like a parquet floor on his
chest.
That's
true. Yeah. Somewhere in America, Mark Halperin is sitting in front of his laptop saying, I can't believe Steve-O isn't wearing a jacket.
Everybody can believe
that. Yeah, that's true.
So I forget what we were talking about, but this is funny. I didn't see all those tweets. Wasn't there a tweet about that he made about her getting the plastic surgery?
Yeah, I mean,
she's bleeding?
Yeah, bleeding was, yes, she was bleeding, right? At the White House, maybe?
No, at Mar-a-Lago when she went.
At Mar-a-Lago, right. Yeah, I didn't include that. This was just about nobody watching.
Yes,
and this
right.
is about a president who gets all of his information from cable news. He gets it from Fox News.
The shows.
And he still watches this show. And I suspect he still gets some from Breitbart, even though the Breitbart has left the room. So I just loved the hypocrisy in there. The first thing he did today was talk about how bad Morning Joe was, talking about his chief of staff who has no control over him.
I have to say that Trump's tweets are pretty funny, though. Right? I mean, they're wrong and they're terrible, but they're funny.
I don't think they're funny. I think they're all.
Those tweets against
terrible.
Morning Joe are pretty funny.
I don't think they're funny. I really don't think
they're funny. They're funny because of how pathetic it reveals.
It's absurd.
Trump to be.
It's outrageous and ridiculous and funny in that way.
You know,
it's not like brilliant humor. It's just ridiculous.
We didn't get to the story yesterday, but Valerie Plame, you'll remember Valerie Plame, right?
So the Scooter
former
Libby.
CIA agent who was outed by the Bush administration.
That's actual treason.
That was treason, and nobody went to jail. Well, Scooter Libby was indicted, but was pardoned at the end of the Bush administration, was he not?
I don't think he got the pardon.
I don't think he got the pardon. I think he was up for it, and there was a lot of political pressure.
So I'm wrong about that. But it was a case, and it was an argument, but Dick Cheney escaped any kind of scrutiny for that, of course. In any case, she has started, it's not a GoFundMe, but it's like it's one of the relatives of GoFundMe, to buy Twitter. To raise, the goal was $1 billion so that she could buy Twitter, have enough of a voting interest to close the account of Donald Trump because she thought it was so dangerous to what was happening in America. She was up to like $8,700. And I don't think that's a reflection on the people agreeing that they want Trump off of Twitter so much as it's, if they're trying to raise $1 billion, my 10 bucks isn't going to get them anywhere. So, I disagree with you guys about his Twitter. I don't think it's funny. I find it offensive. I think it's childish. I think it makes us look terrible. And it brings out the worst in everybody.
I agree with everything you said. I agree, but it's funny on a pathetic level. But you're right. It's not funny like, Trump's a funny comedy writer. It's funny because he's funny in a pathetic way.
Right.
That's what all those tweets told me. Like, and plus, it is so juvenile. It's almost like South Park is writing those tweets, right? So it's so unpresidential. It's so the opposite. It is like a cartoon character is our president,
right? And it doesn't make Americans feel good.
Right? No,
you know,
no.
And that's the bottom line. I mean, the president's not going to make every American feel good ever, or maybe even most of them.
But this guy's veering off in the other direction about that stuff. And maybe that's hokey or something, but I just think it's terrible. So anyway, I hope Valerie Plame gets her $1 billion. Although I think Twitter's valuation's higher than somehow than $1 billion. But here's something that Jimmy will find funny. And there is now word that a unity ticket for the 2020 election is going to be coming across our landscape. John Kasich, you'll remember, the winner of the New Hampshire primary, the last person really a viable candidate to leave the race in 2016, the governor of Ohio, he'd probably say that first. He and John Hickenlooper, who's the governor of Colorado and the former mayor of Denver, there are rumors that the two of them are looking to form a unity ticket, a Republican and a Democrat, to run to unify the parties. The source that said that broke this story to CNN said this: the idea of a joint ticket has been discussed, but not at an organizational or planning level. What they're trying to show the country is that honorable people can disagree, but you can still problem solve together. It happens in businesses and it happens in families. Why can't it happen in Washington? Jimmy, why can't it happen in Washington?
I'll tell you this. I don't know the answer to why it can't happen in Washington, but this is so backwards. People think that this is what America wants. People in a bubble think that. No normal person wants this. No regular person that I've ever talked to wanted this, to see this happen. This again is, so Hickenlooper, who's in bed with frackers, is a neoliberal. I had much higher hopes for him than he's turning out to be. And no one's saying, you know what we really need is for the Democrats to become more like Republicans, or the Republicans to become, no one is saying this.
Yeah.
And so this is just some fake idea that Chris Matthews probably thought up, because right. I heard him say this before. He told Hillary Clinton that she should pick John Kasich. Well,
they didn't invent it. I mean, there have been, historically, people have talked about getting people from opposite sides to join together. It's never happened. I mean, it hasn't happened since Gore picked Lieberman. But that
turned out well, though.
Right. But listen, I mean, that's a whole interesting political conversation, Gore Lieberman. They were in the same party. Lieberman was a Democrat. It was, you know, before he took an independent run. But the whole idea, see, I agree with you. People don't want that. People involved in politics don't want that. People on the outside of politics hate hearing the fighting. They hate Congress at 8% because all they do is bicker and don't get anything done. And I'm talking, you know, in broad strokes here. But why? I agree with you, though. Like, I'm not crazy about this. I wouldn't want this. But why don't they? Like, I don't understand why, if these people can't stand the fighting so much, have these people join, do a unity campaign, and kind of get us over the hump, like a sort of Gerald Ford to get us out of this mess.
Because that's the exact opposite of how politics is supposed to work. You're supposed to have two parties that have different ideas. And that is the problem with our political class. They don't have different ideas. Hickenlooper and Kasich are bought by the same people. That's why this is even an idea. That's why, because it's palatable to their donor class, which is, as we know, runs our government, which is because of the Princeton study has revealed that we don't live in a democracy. We live in an oligarchy, and oligarchs might be okay with this, but the people aren't okay with this. And I don't think the people get upset when people fight in Washington, D.C. I think people get upset when nothing happens in Washington,
right.
D.C. People
right.
like to see Bernie Sanders fighting. People like to see Trump fighting. People want to see people fighting for something, not pretending we don't have to fight for something.
Right, and I misspoke a little bit, because what I meant was they don't like that nothing gets done because
right.
of the fighting, not that they don't want passion. And you were right for the very beginning of what you said, which was the answer, which is that people, that's not what politics is about. It's about fighting very hard for your side, making compromises, but not making compromises on who leads the country
right.
and who leads the party.
Well, yeah, I agree. And I mean, you're totally right. The oligarchs would love this. They would love for the Democrats and Republicans to come together mm-hmm. to do all the stuff that they want you to do, all the corporatist stuff. So, you know, slashing corporate taxes, gutting regulation, and allowing them to, you know, merge endlessly and have a monopoly in every single industry. So I think that's actually one of the biggest threats to our democracy, is the ever expanding monopolies. They control everything.
And the oligarchs would love John Kasich. That's the thing.
Yes.
They wouldn't necessarily love John Hickenlooper, but John Kasich's going to be the president, I would imagine.
imagine, in this.
He is.
And he's the top of the vice ticket. Right. Yeah. So yeah. It's not a compromise ticket, right? It's a vice president. I'll make Hickenlooper my vice president. My vice president does nothing, right? It's going to have no effect on anything, right? Joe Biden was a great cheerleader. The Senate loved him. He was a good liaison. He made a big difference dealing with the Congress. Mike Pence hasn't made as much of an impact as people thought. People thought that he would be able to sway the Congress a little more than he has. John Hickenlooper would do absolutely nothing. So it would be the Kasich presidency. So everybody would love John Kasich, who is an oligarch. So that's the whitest flag that the Democrats could ever throw up would be to do this.
Well, if they did this, because what the vice president's job is to go to funerals. So right. If this did happen, John Hickenlooper would go to the funeral of the Democratic Party.
So you know who tried this actually? It was actually Barack Obama. So this is, I think, where there was a massive disconnect between Obama and a lot of the masses. So when he said he was going to change Washington in a fundamental way, I think people thought he was going to change the way politics is done, in the sense that the lobbyists will be out and politicians will be more accountable to the people. What Barack Obama meant was that he will help the two sides stop the bickering and the fighting. And instead of a red America and a blue America, there will be a purple America, and we'll all kind of get along. That was his vision of changing fundamentally the way Washington works, which is, people don't care about the fighting. As Jimmy said, people want them, they want their representatives to fight for what's good for you.
They do, but they do care, Steve, about not getting anything done, because
yes,
they're always taking that part.
That's right, that's right.
But there's fighting within a party too, and this is my awkward segue into the next story, because I want to get through. There's one at the end that I really want to talk about. The president and Jeff Flake, the junior senator from Arizona, have had a war now for quite a while. Flake is up for re-election in 2018. He's going to be primaried. Kelly Ward, who is running, she's a failed candidate in the past. Mm-hmm. She's the one also who said John McCain should resign because he has cancer, which I thought was fascinating. This is an ad that Kelly Ward is running now in Arizona.
Please, Mr. President, don't mention any names. And nobody wants me to talk about your other senator, who's weak on borders, weak on crime, so I won't talk about him.
The president doesn't need to name names, because I will. Jeff Flake is weak. And he's failed us in the Senate.
One vote away from victory after 7 years.
One vote from an Arizona senator would have repealed Obamacare. We cannot let that happen again. I'm Dr. Kelly Ward, and I approve this message because Arizona and America deserve better.
Running against Jeff Flake, who voted for the health care. So she said one vote from an Arizona senator. John McCain voted against it. She's not running against John McCain now. She ran against him and lost pretty badly in a primary. Also, Donald Trump wants State Treasurer Jeff DeWitt or State GOP Chairman Robert Graham to be that candidate against Flake. Flake is as conservative as you can be. He takes issue with the president on certain personality flaws and certain of the ways that he carries out his business. We'll read this very quickly. This is from Jeff Flake's book that a lot of people are talking about. It's A Conscience of a Conservative. I've read a lot of it, actually, and it's a really good book about politics. I don't agree with Jeff Flake on very much. There's the trust your gut, shoot from the hip approach to political decision making. Then there's the fly off the handle approach, as evidenced by the 2016 presidential campaign. Flying off the handle is a big, big hit right now, at least in terms of its entertainment value and ratings. In this book, I mean to establish that as a governing philosophy, the instability of flying off the handle is a disaster for the United States and is profoundly unconservative. The same goes for our state-of-the-art presidential bellicosity, which seems to be quite popular in the quote-unquote conservative circles these days. And that is the antithesis of conservatism, too. And it is also very often the antithesis of truth. So Donald Trump wasn't naming names in Phoenix. Jeff Flake didn't name names here, and you can see why Donald Trump has an itch right now to get rid of Jeff Flake, because you wrong the president, he's going to come after you in that way. And he did the same thing with Bob Corker today, the senator from Tennessee, who's a senior senator, also up in 2018. Bob Corker last week, and I don't, let's listen to Bob Corker here talk about Donald Trump, and we'll see why he got upset.
The president has not yet been able to demonstrate the stability nor some of the competence that he needs to demonstrate in order to be successful.
And this morning, after taking in Morning Joe, Donald Trump decided that he was going to tweet about Bob Corker. Strange statement by Bob Corker, considering that he has constantly asked me whether or not he should run again in 2018. Tennessee not happy. So he's at odds with the president, with the Senate. It's going to be very difficult when they come back to do tax. I don't want to say tax reform. It's tax cuts.
Tax cuts.
Tax cuts. When he comes back, this is how this president operates. This is why Jeff Flake is pissed. TYT, we'll be back in a minute. We're talking about food. That's what we're talking about during the break. Italian food.
Good steaks.
And steaks and bone marrow, obviously. Welcome back to the Young Turks. Michael Schur, Jimmy Dore, and Steve-O. We're going to be quick here, but this is a story that you guys have to hear because it really explains a lot about what happened in America a couple of weeks ago in Charlottesville. A South Carolina judge Thursday, that's yesterday, dismissed a North Carolina man's petition to return the Confederate flag and pictures of Stonewall Jackson and Robert E. Lee to the York County Courthouse. Which is in
South Carolina.
He's a North Carolina man. So So the judge threw the case out. He was trying to file it under South Carolina Heritage Act. The judge said his lawsuit has no standing because he lives in North Carolina and that it has no merit because there's been no court case regarding the Heritage Act and whether it applies to buildings. So that was that, right? Here's a guy who wanted to see it go up, and he was very upset that it was coming down. And here is the eminent Russell Walker. He's not a racist, he says.
I don't believe it's a symbol of racism. I don't believe it's a symbol of slavery. That's my personal view, but how they feel is their business. But it would be ludicrous for me to tell you how they feel. Hey, I get down the street, I see Martin Luther King. I shouldn't say that. Martin Luther King. I mean, Should I rip the signs down or insist that they take Martin Luther King Street down and arrest that stuff? That's a public thing. I don't necessarily agree with it, but that's just the way it is.
He doesn't agree that Martin Luther
Coon? Was that what he said?
That's what he said.
That's unbelievable.
Now, I don't know if I believe it was an accident or if he's just so fucking dumb that he actually let it slip.
No, I bet he says it all the time in private or with his buddies. And it just slipped out.
Yeah,
that's what I think it is.
And now he has to go back to his home state of North Carolina because his case in South Carolina didn't work out. What are we?
When he says I don't agree with Martin Luther King Boulevard, like what don't you agree with?
He doesn't necessarily agree with it. Maybe that it just cuts through town and creates a lot of traffic. That's what I'm guessing. I'm guessing it's just too damn noisy on Martin Luther King Boulevard for him. No, he disagrees that they named it for Martin Luther King.
Yeah,
because. And that's naming it. That's not putting a statue up.
Right.
Right? It's an American hero.
Yeah. So
not someone who tried to make America better, not someone who tried to divide America and
not someone who actually attacked and killed America.
Right.
It's funny that he says that, you know, it's not that Robert E. Lee is a symbol of racism or any of that stuff. It's just, of course, that's why he likes it. Of course, why else would you like it?
Right.
The guy's a loser. He's a losing general. He lost.
Yeah.
They were seditious to the United States of America. And so what else is there to like about the guy, unless that he represents of racism?
Right.
That's the only thing that's...
He had this eureka moment in his house in North Carolina one day. You know what I'm going to do? I'm going to go down South Carolina. I'm going to tell them they can't put those statues up.
But he sees it as a big win, and I'll tell you why. Because he got to say Coon on TV.
Right.
And so now he will forever be getting drinks bought for him wherever that racist bar is that he goes to.
They were already buying him drinks for this, I'm sure. Jimmy, Steve, thank you very much. Second hour, TYT Live, there were some tweets. I'll read one. Chris Bradshaw, working in the White House sounds like living in the Twilight episode with that evil, omnipotent 6-year-old. Yeah, I guess that's true. There were a bunch of others saying that they don't like what the unity ticket means because two parties are going to mean that it's bad for progressives. Neither will be progressive. That's probably accurate. I don't think it's going to happen. Second hour today, Ambria, Grace, and Brett. So you got 2 out of 3 are great. And have a great weekend. We'll be back with more TYT.